Lynchy, Castleford, and I know exactly what you said, but with the other four games, you are a far better team than what you showed on Thursday. We all know that. And yeah, again, it's a question. Why did it happen?
Yeah, wish we knew ourselves. You know, like you say, Paul mentioned attitude. You know, you can go for when you're on a winning streak, you don't come up with a lot of answers, do you? It's when you start losing, you start questioning yourself. We're doing this right. We're training right. We're doing the weights right. Conditioning. So you ask yourself all these questions, don't you? But you know, I feel like you say it comes down to attitude, and we've got to knuckle down and work hard, you know, and put it right this week in Salford. It's a massive game.
Wolfie for sure is that for mine, you made the eight. There's no doubt about that. And you don't become a bad team overnight. You don't all become bad individual players overnight. But again, another question it'll be, which a few supporters have said to me, was, well, Scully, how come that 17 of them can all play bad in one night? Yeah. You know, normally you might get, you know, about three or four having poor nights, but still the bit of quality what you've got will get you where you want to get a little bit, get the result. But all the 17, and I'll tell you what as well, Ollie Holmes, what stick did he get in training this weekend with that dummy what he took off?
I can't believe Jamie did him with that dummy. We spoke about it all week as well, so it makes it even worse. So we're good mates as well, so I'm sure Jamie will give him some stick for that.
I mean, we mentioned at the beginning of the season that it would take some transition for Cass this year because you'd lost some players, but also you didn't have injuries last year. You were the unknown quantity. You had everybody fit at the beginning of 2014. It gave you such a springboard for the rest of the season. But you've sort of had the opposite this time. How long have you given yourselves to hit some level of consistency?
Well, to be fair, we thought we'd have done it by now, to be honest, and it's probably disappointing to where we are sitting at that table. So, like you said, there's a lot of hard work to do, and we've got to keep going. And do you know that we showed what we can do against Wigan? Mm. But like you say, it's playing week in, week out, and then mate, 7 or 8 out of 10s to get up there and get in that top four. So, you know, we've got to go from playing 2 out of 10. We've got a lot of work in training to put it right this week.
It's not 1 to 10, 2 to 9. Gary Schofield is here, Andy Lynch is here, Phil Kaplan is here, and Tim Robey, the referee, is here as well. Tim,
we can ask Tim now he's retiring how he rates every team to referee, so we could start with Castleford. No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
Well,
which players do you hate refereeing?
Yeah, that's the question I was going to ask him, because they'll have him, because
Lynch wasn't great, to be honest.
good call, but I know.
So did I ever send you off?
One referee in our day, and he made it well known, that a guy called Robin Whitfield. We all know Robin, what a character he was, and he I don't know if he brought a book out or he said it some speaking what he used to do. He said he used to hate referee myself, Ellery, and Dowler himself, because we always just used to ask a few questions. Well, at the end of the day, we were captains. We were allowed to ask a few questions from the first minute to the last. So, anyway. Go on, Tim. Yeah. Come on. Who gets on your nerves the most?
Well, I didn't have the pleasure of refereeing you, actually, so that could have been interesting. I think it's good that we have different personal relationships, actually, and that it's not all just too robotic. And, you know, we do have different characters as referees, and we try and be different as well, so we're not always just the same. Relationships differ, but generally pretty good with players, actually. And you know, I've never had a problem with people getting heated, with people challenging things. There's a line to be crossed, but generally pretty good, and it's good to be able to come and you know sit alongside players now as well.
Absolutely. I think you was at the Wakefield game. Was it the Wakefield game when the beat Hull? Yeah, you did that
the,
game
this year. Yeah,
this year. Yeah.
Two, that's right.
Yeah. I was there, and actually, yeah, I was praising you very, very well because the question I asked the guy who was doing the radio with me was, I'm sure you may answer it openly, and you may not, but one thing what I says was quite clearly, referees seem to referee better when this big screen's not there and you've got the option of the video ref. Do you referee differently when you're on television rather than when the screen's out there?
Oh, there's certainly a feeling of more pressure, I would say, if you're on the television. But the key is to referee with the same confidence either way. So I think, without speaking for anybody else, that the tripping point is if you go on television doubting yourself. And the key to refereeing well is to be confident, making decisions, to be really backing what you're doing. And that's what you do when you're not on TV, because it's what you have to do. So the key is not to change your game too much for television.
So there you go, Gary.
Convinced.
No, but anyway, we'll see.
We should ask a player about relationships with referees. Are there some that are more approachable than others? And do you feel that you have to treat referees differently, depending on who they are?
No, I don't think so. I think it's probably a bit better for me now I'm a bit older, you know, so you tend to speak to them more and you get on with them more. I remember when I first started with Carl Kirkpatrick, he couldn't really speak to him, but as I got older...
I don't think he still can, to be honest.
You know, you can have a bit of a joke, so... I just think it's great. I think all the players have got respect for the referees, and if you compare us to football, which I don't like doing, but you see all the footballers straight up in the referee's face and touching them. But you know, when the referee says something to us, it's right, there you go, Joe, carry on. So you know, they've got a tough job in that middle to try to look after.
You've tried refereeing under sevens, you know.
Yeah, I'll pass on that as well. I get it from parents, so no chance for that.
You're not thinking about going into refereeing after you've finished playing then?
No, it's too hard for me.
What made you want to become a referee in the first place, Tim?
I did always play, and I wasn't bad, if I may say so, but I was never going to... I wasn't big enough and I was never going to make the grade.
No one in the studio has ever been a player who's ever had a low opinion of their own ability.
Yeah. I mean, I used to captain my club and I played for Lancashire Service Area, but I was the kind of player who would learn the smallest detail to try and get an advantage, and I'd be trying to take a quick tap or win a scrum penalty or something. So probably a bit of an annoyance as a player. And then it probably clicked one day that I might make a decent referee because I understood the mindset to try and steal a little or get away with a little bit.
So when you was playing then, Tim, how did you find referees then when you was coming through the ranks then?
a bit of a confession actually. I once got Simbin Dan sent off in the same game for one for fighting and one for referee abuse. So there's an interesting
surprise. Well, I got sent off once all in my career and for refereeing abuse, and to be honest with you, it was Stuart Cummins, and if I'm honest with you, he fully deserved it as well, if I'm honest with you. Yeah, and
I think mine was a Sunday morning.
And just a little
under
story, story there, the abuse, what I gave him, and anyway, I went up to the disciplinary.
What did he say?
I can't repeat it. I can't repeat it. Anyway, I got two matches for it, but they said for me, for my good record, you know, because it's only the first time, but for my good record, I would have got 6 matches for the abuse, but I only got 2. But then when I looked at my record, I'd realised that you get your discipline record, and I've been sin binned 19 times. Have a guess what for? Referee abuse. I'm not really proud of, but Mr. Cummins, he sent me off there. But I must say, Tim, I've got to say, he should not be on television doing what he does with Sky Sports, because quite clearly, at times, I feel as though he's belittling you guys, because he's quite clearly got all the views there, what have you. He should not be on television doing what he's doing, and also, as well, making opinions of you guys, because... Everybody's opinion of a referee, for mine, is it can only give what he sees. It's all great with technology and all this sort of thing, but you fellas, you know, he should not be in that position where he's criticising the people who he's worked with and this sort of thing. Nowhere made whatsoever. I don't know what you're feeling on that.
Yeah, to be honest, I tend not to watch TV coverage in terms of, you know, the general commentary. And, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Stuart for his knowledge of refereeing and the stuff he's taught me over the years. But... sorry if it's a cop out, but I do try and keep my head away from the stuff that would be said about games, and I think it's important that people do realise the difficulty of the job. And if there's anything that adds to that understanding and the things that we do, then it's a good thing.
Is there more the sport then can do to, say, at the start of the season when there's different interpretations on rules, explain those better to the general public at large?
We've tried to improve over the past few years of being approachable and communicating with the wider game. So we've had the Twitter initiative, for example, and nothing's perfect with it, and we find that, you know, whatever avenue we take, we get primarily abuse back. So I'm not sure what the best way to do really is, but I think building relations is the best thing that we can do, but open to suggestions really.
Is that the thing you have to do first, a referee, develop a very thick skin?
Yeah, it's something that comes quite quickly, without realising it as well, I think. Yeah, the younger you are when you start, yeah.
There was one question about the rules this year I wanted to ask. Has there been a directive on penalties at the scrum, or is it just that I've been at games where there appear to have been penalties given at the scrum, because it seems for years, you know, the rugby league scrum, no offence, Andy, Gary will, you know, hark back to the old days and Phil when they were proper scrums and everything, and we know what they are now, but it seems to me we've got more differential penalties being given at the scrum. Is that something that's been an edict brought down to the referees this season?
Well, there's a tactic that's been going around for a couple of years, that the scrum trap is, as we know it, I don't know if that's something that Andy might know about as well, but the only instances I can think of is there's certainly not been a directive, but there's been a bit of a trend for a couple of years where a team will the feeding team will leave the ball at the back of the scrum so it doesn't emerge, and then try and catch the defence offside, force us into giving a penalty, and generally comes where they might need a cheap 30-40 metres and get upfield. When we try to police it as best we can, but sometimes we're forced into a penalty. But that's the only instance, really. Yeah.
Are you glad that we haven't been talking much about obstruction? it's been the dirty word of the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, we've all been trying to work out the various permutations, what is and what isn't obstruction. But it appears that this year it seems to be something we've been talking about less.
I see obstruction in my sleep still. You know, we talk about it a lot. We have done for a couple of years now. And it's very difficult. There's no getting away from the question that there's no simple answer, because if you under-police it, the game will become American football. If you over-police it, then we kill good rugby. Certainly been, the policy's been touched up this year, and I think probably in line with what the game approves of, certainly fewer penalties, and our parameters are a bit more lenient have been this year, yeah.
If there's one rule you could change, then here's one for you all to think about. What would be the one rule you would change?
Ball stealing. Ball stealing. Yeah. If the opposition don't want the ball, take it off him. Ball steal.
We got no matter how many men are attacking.
No, ball stealing. No. If you've got the ball, it's your protection. No, ball stealing. Yeah. If you don't want it, take it off him.
Phil?
I think, just going back to what was being said about the obstruction, I think it was absolutely right that Kevin Penny's try was given against Leeds. That, in perhaps the previous season, there would have been a shepherd while he was looking for the route through the Leeds. Nobody was impeded from tackling him. It was absolutely the right decision to play on. The rule that I've never thought has been fair is the charge down. I think that's a skill, that if you can exert kick pressure and you can charge the ball down, why should the attacking team have the ball back to zero? Now, I think the tackle count should remain, and then if it's the last tackle and they've got to pick up the ball 20 metres behind where they kicked it, then that's exactly what should happen. I think to get somebody to actually put pressure on a kicker and not be rewarded for it seems wrong to me. So, I don't think you should ever have a zero tackle count off a charge down.
Obviously, Tim, you have to enforce these. Is there anything that you'd particularly change?
In terms of difficulty, the ball steals are very, very difficult. So, I agree with Gary on maybe not the outcome of it or where to go, but it's certainly one of the most difficult parts of the game, because you can't see numbers in all the time. It's very close. It's hands on the ball. But from a reffing point of view, it's probably some of the small things like the scrum trap, for example. It would really help the job that the refs do to get rid of a few of those small things that can disrupt the focus on the bread and butter of the game, and maybe stop silly little tactics like that.
Is this where you have to go back to your time as a player and trying to work out little ways to annoy referees?
Yeah, or to be honest, I don't think we should ever rid the game of those little things. It's, there's always got to be room for somebody to get an edge.
Andy, what would you change? What would make your life easier?
I probably won't make my life easier. I'd probably make it harder, I think. But the shoulder charge, I think. People come to watch the game of rugby league for a bit of entertainment, and obviously they get it in the attacking aspects. But I think it takes a lot of aggression out of what players have. So if you bring that back, and it's going to make it a bit more aggressive for every player.
It's like cricket, where they say it's all in favour of the batsman these days. The bowler doesn't get much help. You don't get much help in defence with the way the rules are.
It probably is, like you say, it probably is a bit safer with no shoulder charge, but it's just part and parcel of the game, and you've got to get on with it, haven't you? Just let it flow.
And say, Richard, as well, we were talking about it last week, the cannonball tackle, and I was at the Keighley Swinton game yesterday, and believe it or not, there was one in that game yesterday from a Swinton player, and it just caused a fight, just caused a brawl. And again, I am appealing to the powers that be, the people who run our game, the disciplinary, get this tackle outlawed. And anybody who is attempting or caught doing a cannonball tackle, and referees have an onus on this as well, rather than using the silly put-on report, because you know exactly what a cannonball tackle is, you know exactly what it is. Anybody doing that from a point of view where, all right, I may miss time, whatever, get them off and get them banned for 12 months and it'll stop it straight away. And it happened yesterday at the Keighley Swinton game and it just started a brawl. It's not right.
What
I'd say, Andy, what do you feel about it? This cannonball attack. It's where you get held. It's where the two defenders hold him up and then he comes and attacks below the knees.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they call the cannonball tackle.
I think there's a fine line in that. It's massive, You can't be over-aggressive, but you've got to be aggressive enough to get them down,
Yeah, but why attack the bottom of the... why attack below the... You're intended to hurt somebody, aren't you?
Well, we don't know, but there might be some players out there that do.
That's what I'm saying. It's going to happen one day when a player's career is going to finish. And it happened yesterday, and as I say, any intention again, or anybody caught doing it, get them off the field and get them suspended heavily, and it'll stop it.
So I'm sensing you're not a fan of the report system, then, or the way it's used more?
No. It's a cop-out, simple as that.
Yeah, I think there's been quite a big change in that this year. I don't know what the stats are, but I can talk for the beginning of the season, we were encouraged to, we can use the sin bin more widely now. So hopefully that reduces on reports and encourages us to make decisions.
I tell you what, it's got better though.
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
A few years ago, there's not as much as it.
The cannonball. Yeah. Oh, no, because Michael Maguire's gone and all this sort of thing. Don't worry about that. If he was still over here, don't worry about that. He would try and implement it in a way, it's part of the game, this sort of thing.
I watched Souths in that game, and I don't think they used it.
No, because they're not allowed to in Australia. It's banned. In Australia now, it's banned.
Yeah,
it's banned. But also, Tim, we're talking about there, different interpretations. We'll go back to the World Series and a couple of high tackles there, and we know what happened the week before with the Patrick Avance scenario. We know, at St George, with Benji Marshall, what happened there, and also to the winger. And then, a couple of high shots with Brisbane. Why were the referee in a different sort of way?
It was a new guideline for us this year to use sin bins for high tackles, and send-offs...
Why wasn't they used in the World Series games, then?
Well, send-offs are supposed to be something that hits us all straight in the face that we'd agree with, or literally in the face. The sin bin it's subjective. It's about the referee's feel on the day. There's been disagreement about when it should have been used, and, we were 2-3 rounds in, and... probably different opinions in the group and people getting used to the new system.
But the question I'm asking is, because it was a World Series and supposed to be refereed in NRL or international thing, but if that was a Super League fixture, would they have been simbined or sent off? That's the question I'm asking. Because, again, it's that consistency in interpretation which frustrates everybody, not just players, supporters, everybody in the game, to be honest with you.
If a mistake was made, it wasn't because of the game that it was. It was because of... a mistake on the night that there wasn't a good view or indecision or whatever
else. On telly.
Yeah, well,
it's a beauty.
But it certainly wasn't. Yeah, we don't come into games because it's this game or Super League or whatever else, and you've just got to make the call. And we have different opinions about as the job is that we do. And
right, okay then. Was you at home watching it?
Yeah.
What did you think then? Did you think? Soon as you saw it, that's a sin bin sending off. Come on, be honest.
I was in the video van.
Come on, you're going to Australia next week, so it don't matter now. It don't matter now.
I'd have sent them all off. No, not really.
No,
not really.
No, but when you saw on television, what do you think? That's a sin bin, or is it sending off? What was your initial reaction?
Yeah, gut reaction was I probably thought one of them was a bin.
The first one on Kevin Penny, that surely was a sin bin.
I think it was probably the worst one. I didn't think the Marshall one
I didn't think that one, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I think it probably, it was a bit unlucky on the night that followed the first one and added to the hysteria a bit, but...
If we'd have done it to an Aussie, it wouldn't have mattered, If it'd been the other way around, it wouldn't have mattered, would it? We wouldn't be discussing this, would it? But
after one of
our guys, yeah.
You mentioned hitting the face. We've got to ask, because you're here... But the Ben Flower incident, you were arguably the closest person to it.
Yeah. So,
what goes through your mind at a point where you're 2 minutes into a grand final, arguably your biggest night of the year, never mind the players,
yeah,
and you're called on to make a decision that is going to be potentially game-changing so early in such a showcase game?
Yeah, well, I'm on my debut as a grand final. I've done the cup finals before. I'm on my debut, a little bit nervous but ready. We obviously try to go out for these occasions being the calmest people. That's our intention, to go out and be the calmest people amid 70,000 there. I'll never forget, really, the first set or two that were the most physical sets of rugby I'd ever seen live on a pitch. They absolutely ripped into each other. So, I knew it was big. I knew something was coming. And then, yeah, 2 minutes into my first grand final and flick across the pitch and see a pretty horrific punch. But to be honest, the reaction as a dyed-in-the-wool referee was, I wouldn't go so far as to say excitement, but there's a certain feeling of when you know you've got a big call and you know you've seen it, you know, you've got it, and no matter what 70,000 people say, or no matter what players appeal, no matter what, if you're doing the job properly, you've seen it, you're confident, and you absolutely... That obviously, it was a red straight away. You've seen it, you know it, and you've got to be calm and measured, but there was a little bit of, like, I've seen it, I've got the call, this is the reason that I do the job, to make these big calls, and the best feeling about the job is when you do get that kind of thing and you know that you're right.
So there wasn't any discussion between you for you to say, oh, can we put it on report?
Well, we did consider a sin bin, actually, for... No, I'm only joking.
Oh, Jesus, good job you didn't.
It's, yeah.
It's a good... Because I can reassure you, Tim, you wouldn't be going to Australia next week if you did.
Yeah, but... No, it was. Yeah. In some ways, you know, it wasn't a pleasant incident, but.
But it had to be done, didn't it? Oh, it was a straight sending off, simple as that.
In a strange way, it made our job easier because there was no doubt about it, really. So, a very, very strange opening to a game, but as I said, it's from a purely refereeing point of view, it's nice to know that you've got the call, because it didn't play on our minds for the next 78 minutes. We'd done it, we boxed it off, and we moved on. And the game went really well after
that. Would have known yourselves that you had made the right call, so there wasn't going to be any comebacks whatsoever, was there, on that decision?
You can imagine sending somebody off 2 minutes into grand final with doubt in your mind. Yeah. It would have been pretty awful. But no, it was... I was really proud of, actually, the team on the day that I was in. We really did just box it off, and it just went. Didn't think about it again, and... I thought it was handled really well.
I must say, yes, it was a good call by the officials. Well done.
Well, you can imagine the furore had we missed it as well. Yeah.
That's the point that must be made. From that moment onwards to Flowers' ban in the end, the whole incident was dealt with inside the sport, and the media hysteria from people outside of rugby league who, watch the sport.
It was dealt with in a very professional way from the top, the Harrowfelt, and also to the two clubs, Wigan and St. Helens. It was dealt with in the most professional way, dealt with very, very quickly, so everybody had to take a pat on the back the way they did it, and as Tim's mentioned there, the way that all the officials knew straight away it was a sending off from that point of view, so...
Yeah, and there's nothing personal in these things from refereeing, is nobody holds grudges, nobody judges, referees don't judge people morally or anything like that.
I don't hold a grudge against Mr. Cummins.
maybe the odd one or two players get judged like that, but...
I don't hold a grudge against Cummins, don't worry about that.
We talk about players having heroes and idols growing up. Who are your refereeing idols, so to speak?
Well, when I was coming through, I don't know if I'd say idols or heroes, but
it's probably the wrong word.
I looked up to style-wise. Ashley Klein was a bit of a role model for me. I liked the manner in which he refereed, and I've always had coming through that. People saw similarities with me and him. I probably got quite close to a few of the senior guys in our group over the years. And Steve Ganson's somebody else that probably at first thought we were very different characters, but over the years we've come to see that beneath the surface we're actually see eye to eye on a lot of things and quite similar in some ways. So he's someone else that I looked up to.
So, Tim, you go to Australia next week for, obviously, a great new career for yourself, I'm sure you'll enjoy all the lifestyle. I've come here just for you. I've got the shorts and the flip-flops on.
Flip-flops, yeah.
Just to make you feel at home. In a cold Monday night here, Wednesday. But, I want to wish you all the best, and I'm sure it will be a success for yourself. So,
thanks.
Obviously, the carrot's been dangled. Why leave Super League? Because you're on the threshold of, moving up to that ladder where you want to get.
Yeah.
Why the sudden change?
It's always been a big ambition. I grew up watching the NRL. So it was always an ambition at some point. Obviously, the question is the timing. And you say about perhaps being on the threshold of bigger things, but then But, you know, that was the big risk, and I'm giving up a permanent contract, really, in Super League. Mm. I'm 25 now, but I realised after thinking that if I get to 30, for example, and say I'm in the ring for, say I'm in the ring hopefully for finals or big games, it suddenly becomes a lot harder to walk out on that. And, you know, because you're giving up opportunities to referee at big games on the derbies every week. And so I thought, I'm young, I've got plenty of time. Now really is the time, because I've cemented a spot in Super League, but I'm not quite giving up the number one or the number two. So hopefully, I want to go away, I want to improve my game, be the best referee that I can be. So if I can go to a new system and learn like that, then I think it'll stand me in the best stead.
I'm sure you get plenty of advice. As you mentioned, ask the clients out there. Russell Smith's out there, plenty of experience. I can reassure you, being an Englishman, you're going to get plenty of stick from the Aussie supporters. How are you prepared for that? You know, not just physically, you'll be in good shape. That won't be an issue. But we talk about sports psychology. We talk about, you know, the mental attitude. Mm. You know, how do you think you're going to be coped? Because it will be a different sort of atmosphere yourself, obviously. I don't like the word poms. We're Englishmen going out there, being an Englishman, you know, for the bit of stick that you will receive.
Yeah, I'm ready as I can be, and I'm prepared that I'm going to get tested. I'm going to be made to feel uncomfortable in some ways, probably.
I can reassure you, you will. I've been there as a player, you will.
I'd like to think that I'd thrive on the challenge, really. Think the thing for me is it's a new environment that would hopefully get the best. Yeah. I'm ready for that challenge. And you mentioned earlier about developing a hard skin. I was the youngest Super League ref at 21. The experiences I've had relatively have stood me in good stead for being ready for people questioning what you're doing. You know, we get questioned every week, so
I'll tell you what, maybe one ambition as well. I don't know if you could ask the question to Asta Klein or Russell Smith out there, but an English referee, I think they refereed the first state of origin, Billy Thompson. You know,
right.
Would the opportunity, you think, maybe arise of maybe a referee in a state of origin? Do you think the Aussies would maybe let you? And also as well, Tim Wright, if you do get a test match between Australia and England,
you're not the
for God's sake, make sure you give us the right decisions, all right? Don't go against the green and gold. Give it to the Englishman.
I thought you wanted to get free tickets.
Well, that's another thing, but give the decision to the Englishman. But as I said,
you can touch it if you want.
An ambition of, you know, maybe refereeing state of origin, if that would be, you know, if they may consider that.
It would obviously be a dream come true, but I have no idea. And anything like that is a long, long way down the line. So yeah. I've just got to. I'm more worried about focusing on the challenges that are going to come, like we just said, rather than the big carrots down the line like that. Maybe one day, who knows?
Well, I don't really say, you know, referees, but I want to wish you all the very best. Get into their lifestyle straight away. You love it, and I say it be a great move for you, and I hope you achieve your ambitions, mate. Okay,
great. Thanks very much.
Take Gary's pitch around, particularly if you're going to be based in the western suburbs.
I don't know about that.
You never know what free drinks you might.
I'll superimpose a referee shot on him and then tell him he's into all that now.
It's Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire here until 9 o'clock, discussing everything going on in the world of Rugby League, joined by Castlewood Tigers forward Andy Lynch, referee Tim Roby, Phil Kaplan from 4020 magazine, and the Hall of Famer himself, Gary Schofield. We've had some questions on Twitter asking about rules you'd want to change, things that happen in Rugby League you don't like. Kev, who is a Saints fan, who's not a big fan of John Wilkin, who's just got a 1-year extension to his deal today, which I know you...
Not as a scrum half, I hope.
I don't know if it stipulates where he has to play. He says, when are you going to penalise... This is for you, this is you. Everything in rugby league is your fault. When are you going to penalise a player when he goes to the play the ball and dives as if he has been pushed down? That's cheating. Do we have a... We don't have a major problem with players cheating in rugby league, do we?
No. I mean, there's a lot of gamesmanship in terms of a little bit of milking and trying to win penalties, but... But no, I mean, I was thinking of starting to police that next week once I've left.
you never dive at the play of the ball, would you? No, never.
I'll tell you, you talk about diving. Come in when Russell Smith balled it, when Chris Joint dived in the grand final.
Voluntary tackle.
Voluntary tackle. Yay.
Don't get me in trouble with my new boss, please.
He took a dive down and he totally bottled it, didn't he, Smithy? But I guess another question I'd like to ask you, Tim, because... Like in our days, you know, the referees, you know, they didn't have a referees coach. Nowadays, you've got the referees coach in John Sharp. How does he manage the referees, and how does he coach the referees to make themselves better, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's very different. We're in a full-time structure these days, so it's not dissimilar to players in some ways. We're in a lot during the week. The reviewing is very detailed, very in-depth. A lot of training.
Is that on your own performances, or is it how players are looking, you know, maybe try and get that little extra inch, or holding down in the tackle, or holding the ankles? How does it work?
A bit of it. We review our own game with a bit of everything, so it's every decision we've made on a knock-on, whether it's right or wrong, but also factoring in the bigger picture of your management, your authority, how you've interacted with players, communication, that kind of stuff. So a lot of the stuff that we do is led individually as well. It's what I do on a Sunday evening after I've refereed, or the day after. So it's probably very different these days to in the past for referees. Mm. You know, there's a lot of work that goes in during the week. But I certainly get a lot out of working with, say, somebody such as Steve Ganson, you know, who's in the department and can really teach you a lot about the bigger picture things.
I think the other thing is that the entourage that the match officials have got at the moment, it now takes 20 minutes to get them into the ground. They've got, what is it, drinks providers, massages,
I wish.
Ego boosters.
Yeah. Bodyguards.
Yeah, there's a whole crew of you that turn up for a game these days.
You mentioned doing your video review. I knew Bill Halligan very well.
Right.
Bill Halligan, he's a good referee. He was a quality referee, Bill Halligan. But after the game, he was a gallon and a half of Guinness and fish and chips for Bill. I can reassure you there.
Right.
He didn't do him any wrong. He was a quality referee,
no,
Bill.
There's got to be that. we generally try and get a 24-hour turnaround on a review, for example, and then... But, you know, any given game in Super League will go through about three rounds of review from, the ref on his own, the ref with a coach, and then probably some group stuff as well. So I'll be under no doubt that the games really do get looked at in detail.
Is there a danger of over-analysis, though?
There's certainly a danger of over-rugby, if you like, in a full-time setup. Probably the biggest challenge that I found was doing things away from rugby during the week once I'd gone full time, and it's probably something that players have obviously been through a lot more. But there does come a point where you need to put a game to one side, whether that's because it's gone badly or gone well, and you need to just get ready for the next week. Yeah.
Do the referees as well, because I've always said, and a lot of people have as well, the sign of a good referee and the sign of a great referee, first of all, the question is, do referees feel as though they're part of the entertainment, which obviously is a game itself, and secondly, my thought is, if you don't notice a referee, the referee has done a quality job. So do you feel as though you're part of the entertainment?
To be honest, the second bit you said is something I've always disagreed with, actually, about the thing about a good referee isn't visible. It can be the case, but I also think the aim of our job shouldn't just be to be invisible, because sometimes you can't be invisible. Sometimes the game needs you to be there and big and
can't be invisible, but, yeah. You know, what I'm saying is to be the centre of attraction. So the question, you know, do you feel as though you're part of the entertainment? Because Ganson loves being the centre of attention, doesn't he? Loves being the centre of attention, even now. And he still even gets mistakes there.
Yeah.
As a video referee.
I mean, all this, we have a higher profile in the game in some ways than any of the lads would really want, and I think.
Are you sure about
us,
that?
Well,
are you sure about that too?
I'll speak for myself.
Right, that's okay. Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of that probably comes from some of the media stuff and television coverage that we don't necessarily push. So I don't know about entertainment, but I mean, we had a talk from Howard Webb from football at the start of this season. It was really quite an inspirational, interesting speech, and he addressed the question of about the aim of being invisible, and we talked about how, you know, refereeing is about dealing with conflict and taking conflict on, and if you try and be invisible through your career, all you'll end up doing is never really making an impression. Or, you know, you shouldn't be going out there to be controversial, but you shouldn't be trying to duck big calls just because it might get people talking. That's not what refereeing's about for me.
It's hard to be invisible when you're wearing pink.
Yeah.
Which, of course, the Australian referees have gone against now.
Yes. You can throw your pink.
Yeah, anyway, let's get back to Lynch here. Come on, Lynch, you sat there in the quiet. You thought you got away with this question. The beast on the wing, you know, when he's making these mistakes, you must have said, Tellens there, when he's knocking the ball or giving silly penalties away, you've got to put your head back in the scrum. You've got to make another 6-12 tackles. What do you think?
Yeah, it's disappointing. I'm frustrated as well. But going back to the, well, to be fair, Justin a bit first of all put his hand up saying he's made too many mistakes in his first few games. But going back to the St. Helens game, do you know when he passed that ball to no one, picked up, scored a try. Do you know, you thought any player could have lost the confidence then, but it came around again.
Oh, yeah, he won't lose his confidence, that's for sure.
But he did it again, and put Shenny, I think Shenny or Oggy down wing, so, you know, he's done one bad pass, and he's come up with a good one. So the intention is right, he's just got to hit the target, hasn't he, instead of passing to no one. But like you say, for any forward that, like you say, gets in a scrum and then a bat makes a mistake and you've got to defend again, it's frustrating.
When we talked about Rangi Chase earlier, it must be, as a player, you must want to play with those players in your side where they are unpredictable, but they can completely change games rather than have to work out what to do defending against them.
Yeah, Rangi's a great player, but I reckon it'd be tough to play against him because you don't know what he's going to do. And like say, when you don't know what he's going to do, he can win a game for you. So like say, it's going to be a tough one for us this week when we don't know what he's going
to
do.
And one of your old sides, Hull, lost to Wigan at the weekend, and the week before. You know, we've been talking about Castleford getting close to that first victory of the season, and you actually smashed Wigan off the park.
Yeah, I think that near perfect performance. A lot of people have said like Wigan maybe not didn't turn up, but I don't think Castle allowed them to play on that day. So I don't know where that went last week.
Well, I say as well, we talked about the referees at Castle, but I'd like to just mention with the Huddersfield Giants, and you know, they talk about they think they're a quality team. I think they're miles away, to be honest with you. I do. And they've let a quality player go in Sean Lunt. I find that very, very strange. And Hull Kingston Rovers, who have been struggling a little bit, but now they have got a quality player, which makes them even better. I find it, Phil, I find it a very, very strange call where Huddersfield aren't in depth at the hooker position. Sean Lunt is a quality player, and they let him go to OKR. I find it very strange.
I mean, he's off contract at the end of this year, so I think that he was parting ways with Huddersfield anyway. For some reason,
yeah, but surely you'd want him to stay for the rest of the season.
Well, I guess it's about the team dynamic.
Unless he's a disruptive influence in the dressing room, or there's something going on behind closed doors.
There may well be that there's personality differences between him and the coach or other players within the team. Certainly, they let him go in 2012, and he didn't seem to do too badly, did he?
Well, with
a grand final winners.
But Phil, the question is, why have they let a quality player go? Unless he's that disruptive.
I think they were planning on him leaving at the end of the season anyway. I think the scenario changed when Michael Wayman retired. Unfortunately, we should pay tribute to the fact that throughout his career he's been a terrific servant. Obviously hasn't shown exactly what he can do for Hull KR because of injuries, but a good man to have around the club, apparently. He unfortunately isn't going to get over a serious cumulative knee injury and announced his immediate retirement that same afternoon. Sean Lunt had moved over to Hull KR, so presumably they just transferred the bank account details. And I think Lunt had been earmarked at Hull KR to replace Josh Hodgson, but they hadn't been able to come to a financial deal. So I think once that money became available, and what a difference it makes. I mean, again, only seen the highlights, but Albert Kelly came alive in the second half when Sean Lunt came on. Ken Seo scores a hat-trick. That's not coincidence. If you've got a guy right in the middle of the field that's got pace, direction, support, enthusiasm, suddenly it makes those guys around them so much more dangerous. Bizarre that you could score 46 unanswered points. I mean, again, it'd be worth asking Andy about momentum. There seems to be more momentum shifts this year, and once a team's got on a roll, it's almost impossible to stop them. But I don't know if it's something to do with the fact that we should vary the kickoff again. We've tried it both ways, that the team scoring receives and that the team scoring then gives the ball away. But yeah, do you find it bizarre that teams can score 40 odd points without the opposition barely getting their hands on the ball?
It hasn't happened in past, I don't think, has it?
So, no, it's something like that seems to be
this year, and like you said, there's been other games that's, like you say, 22 points have come back from, but yeah, like you say, I can't put a finger on it myself. It's just one of them things. It's going to be one of them years, I think, that one of them seasons that everything's going to happen.
I guess the good point of view, for if you're 20 odd down at Huddersfield, say, is that you know you still have a chance of actually winning that game, because should you get over for one, there's every chance you might get two or three or
not that, I tell you what, not the way Casper played on Thursday night.
Go on, give us a little bit.
They wouldn't have scored if we were still playing now.
But
but presumably it gives you confidence, the fact that you've seen some of these scores and know that you might fall behind three scores and now that's not enough anymore.
No, it's not. No, like you said, the games, the quality of attacking players getting better and better every year. So you've got to end your game, haven't you? And if, like you say, you're getting that bit of that momentum, it takes a lot to stop it.
More tweets. Gary is a Wigan fan. annoyed by the, not that Gary. Gary on.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant this Gary.
No. Actually, I'm getting out of the word. I didn't have to do the speaking there last week, but it doesn't make me a Wigan fan.
He says he's annoyed by the clock not being stopped. Glad we got that right eventually. Once a goal line drop out, it's been awarded. Greg doesn't like the referee giving a try, then going to the screen. And then it'd been overruled by the video referee in terms of the new ruling on how we refer things to the video referee. Do you like the new way of doing it? Or I guess you have to get used to it because that's how they do it in Australia as well.
Yeah, the live call. I didn't actually get a chance myself to use it in the first three or four rounds, but I actually quite like it. I think, you know, the game's about, it's about putting onus on the referee on the pitch to make a call. And that's why we do the job. Nobody likes hiding behind the video. So I think it's quite a good thing.
Have you got a game this week before you go, Monday?
No, I left for immediate effect.
They've got to shut you straight away, did they?
Yeah, that's right. I begged them for a bit longer, but...
got to shut you straight away.
I decided...
No, Tim, I thought you was doing a good job as well.
I went... Cass was my last game now, the Cass Wigan one, so...
Oh, right.
You know, it went that well for Andy, so I thought I'd leave it on that note. Yeah, so I left with immediate effect. Probably have a 2 or 3 week spell now.
So who's score? Obviously, there's full time. Is there 6 full time referees? Who's likely to fill your boots?
I'm not sure what the plans are.
Don't say Joe Cobb. Please.
I'm not sure what the plans are exactly. Right. You know, there's a couple of those guys who are pushing. A couple of the guys who have you know, solid careers outside of rugby as well, which makes it a difficult call. But certainly someone such as George Stokes. Is probably, you know, as talented as anyone at that level. Certainly the most talented at that kind of age group. So I don't know what the plans are.
I say, Rich, as well, we're just a different subject. I like to make my predictions, so can we get the predictions out for this week so people can maybe...
I don't know how we did last week on the last week.
I think I was pretty poor, to be honest with you, but...
I must have dragged you down.
It's only the first time in 5 weeks, don't worry about that. So we've got St. Helens, Warrington this week, very, very close game, two teams that are in form. I just think maybe Warrington, they like going to Lancashire Park, so I'm going to take Warrington to beat St. Helens and knock them off and spoil their unbeaten 100% record. I'm going for the Wolves by 7... Castleford Tigers by Salford Red Devils. The Tigers can't play as bad again. The players owe the performance of the coach and the supporters. The Tigers by 10. Holy see, Catalans. Jeez, isn't this a big game? Catalans, what, getting beat 46-0 in the second half to Hookies and Rovers. Radders, totally under pressure. The players themselves are under pressure. Holy see will win this one by 8. Rhinos v Wigan. Boy, oh boy, there's only one win here. That's a Rhinos getting back on the horse. The Rhinos by 12. And then, what about these two fixes? The Wildcats, Huddersfield Giants. Can the Wildcats get back where they started for the first two games of the season? Huddersfield Giants playing with confidence. Sorry, Rich, it's the Giants for me. The Giants by 12. And Widnes Vikings beat Hookies to Rovers. Will Hookies to Rovers, like most teams that don't like going to the Widnes Vikings, certainly on that pitch. The Vikings lacking confidence. Hookies to Rovers for mine. Confidence. Chester's turned them around. It's Hookies and Rovers by 10.
Well, look at the top of the Championship. Lee, who we saw yesterday, beat Featherstone Rovers. Although now Featherstone have played the two favourites for the title, and whenever we've been there and commentating on their games, the reports back are, if Featherstone are playing anyone else at Post Office Road, they will get some very good results this season. They're currently fifth. Lee first, Bradford second, Sheffield in third, and Halifax, who had a tough game yesterday against Dewsbury in fourth. I should say Bradford had a very tough game as well against Batley. We look, Andy, obviously Castlewood hoping to be in the top eight, but there's a few teams there. Certainly Lee, as we saw last year, and you can't read too much into one result, but they certainly pushed Leeds close in that Challenge Cup tie. They will be a very dangerous proposition for any of those teams in Super League dropping into the bottom four.
Yeah, definitely. Not just Lee, but I think Bradford, you know, they've prepared pretty well this year for it. And I know they lost to Lee, but they're going well at the moment, so... So anybody's in danger, aren't they, when they get in that second group? There's going to be some competition there, and it's going to be real feisty.
Do you think we will see one of those, or maybe, perhaps both of them, get promoted come the end of the season?
Yeah, the way they go at the moment, you never know, do you? And they'll probably know when they get drawn against some Super League clubs in the Challenge Cup, so it'll be a real test for them and a real test for the Super League clubs as well, just to see where they're at this moment in time.
Are you a fan of the new format, the return, in a sense, to promotion and relegation?
Yeah, I think you definitely need promotion and relegation. It's something to play for, isn't it? You don't sit on your laurels, do you? You want to play to the best you can every week and not probably rest people knowing that you've got a 3-year franchise. So, like you say, it's only good for the game and, like you say, bring more supporters in at the same time.
There seems to be more attention drawn to the Championship this year. We're certainly talking more about it because we're doing commentary on these games as well. You saw Lee last week at Doncaster, didn't you? They're obviously the outstanding team in the division, as you thought. Ridyard and Brearley at halfback doing fantastic as well.
Yeah, Sheffield Eagles, for mine, I think they'll be, at the moment in time, the closest to the Bradford Bulls and Centurions. You can forget the rest. Halifax, Featherstone, they're miles away from competing with them two teams. So, again, in the Championship, it's a three-horse race. There's no two ways about it.
Where's Fev? Fev's up there, aren't
they're fifth.
Being up there,
they're miles away. And if you look at the victories, what Leopold over them and the Bradford Bulls, you know, it's quite clearly they're not there, and it's a free horse race for mine. You know, Sheffield, they started off very well. They normally start pretty slow, don't they? But Mark Astor's put the owner say, let's be consistent week in and week out, and yeah. It's a three-way tier for mine at the moment. There's no two ways about that.
It sounds like they're enjoying, although it's not their home at Doncaster, a bigger pitch for them to play the rugby on than the other.
They've got some smart players. They've got some players who like to, you know, hit the gaps and run out wide and plenty of open spaces. You know, so yeah, they're totally enjoying playing at Doncaster rather than what the Allerton weather was last year.
It's only a shame that we haven't seen any of these games on TV yet. We will do at the Summer Bash.
We haven't mentioned dual registration. It's something that we probably don't need to because we do it every week.
It's a farce, isn't it?
Well, it certainly skews that division. But I was talking to a coach of a club who perhaps isn't expected to get into the top four in that division. And actually, they don't particularly want to. Which, again, would be undermining the every minute matters. Because they know that were they to play in 7 matches in the middle 8 against Super League teams, that their squad is not capable of competing at that level, which is a little bit of a worry, because I think the whole idea of reintroducing something like that is to give everybody a chance. And if there are teams saying we need to build progressively, but actually it wouldn't help us if we got in a position where we were playing sides that we weren't capable of facing, then, you know, something isn't quite right in either the distribution of players or resources.
Tell you what as well, Richard, I'm just looking at the fixture list here. The Broncos this week go to Lee Centurions. Another wake-up call for the Broncos, I'm afraid.
Fortunately for them, it's in the Challenge Cup, so it won't affect their league.
Oh, is it the Challenge? Well, they're going out of the Challenge Cup and put the suits away.
They can't play the Jared Sammets and players like that because they're not going
to
be...
Well, to be honest with you, if they had Jared Sammets, I still wouldn't beat Lee. Don't worry about that.
Well, let's talk about dual registration in a different sense. And if we don't have dual registration, what do we have? Because we've had, in the past, the Alliance teams. Is there the money within the game, stroke Super League, stroke the will in Super League to have large squads so we can have second team rugby or whatever as a way of bringing players back to fitness instead of being sent down to whichever Championship club they have a relationship with?
I'm just not sure it's about money. I think it's about doing the right thing. And the danger, I think, with dual registration is twofold. On the one hand, players who can't get a game in Super League either because they're out of favour or the team is fully fit and their numbers 18 onwards are being put into Championship sides. Well, that's disruptive to the Championship side because it has a twofold effect. One is you don't know who's coming from week to week, but also there's some young lads who are playing in those Championship sides whose places get taken. And we can't afford for any player to be lost from the game at the moment. There's a case at Hounslow at the moment of Danny Grimshaw. You know, he's fallen out with the club for whatever reason. Some of it might be to do with the fact that there are dual registration players coming in and his role is changing. And he seems, you know, he sees himself turning up every week and doing the right thing. And, you know, on the Thursday, a group of players are shipped in, that some of whom may or may not take his position. I also think we need to see how good some of the players playing in the amateur game are. And they used to get that by being trialled in A teams, that if guys were coming back from injury, the only option you've got now is either to play them in Super League or drop them down into the Championship for a week, which again is very disruptive. So yes, I think we should have a reserve competition. I think it should be open to players who need the game time. It should also be a proving ground and an area where guys can come back from injury. And if it costs £100,000 a year, well, would that not be a wise investment of the extra Sky money?
Well, I was thinking, what are your thoughts on bringing back the like the A-team or the Alliance? Yeah. When I first started out, I was in the academy, and if you played well in that academy and the Alliance team was short, you got asked to play for them.
Yeah.
And then people in the Alliance team played on the Alliance Thursday nights, if they played well and they were an injury in first team, you get a shot there. I thought that was a great idea, and it's something for everybody.
Absolutely. But I also think that for somebody, you know, even like yourself, if you'd been out for a couple of weeks injured and somebody said, will you go and play for Doncaster this week, I'm not sure how much that would help you. Yes, it's match fitness, but actually how much does that prepare you to then be put straight back into a Super League team? Or if you're carrying an injury but you're playing every week,
yeah.
Again, you don't get the chance to take a couple of steps back and work your way through the A team back to full match fitness. So I think it's we have a danger at the moment of players getting to the age of 19 and we have to make a decision.
Yeah, I think we lose a lot of players doing
and
that.
And that's a really critical age, particularly as a forward, to say you're not going to make it.
So I even think a lot of people, if you get told you're not good enough, some just pack in, go back playing.
But if you've got a reserve grade of some description, you can keep them involved.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's been a retrograde step for me.
Should mention the Challenge Cup fourth round ties this weekend. Fenton Lions versus York and Lee versus London Broncos on Friday night. On Saturday afternoon, Normanton Knights play Batley. That's been held at Bellevue. Lee Miners versus Oxford and Whitehaven versus Featherstone. And then on Sunday, Barrow Halifax, North Wales Crusaders Doncaster, Bradford Workington, Dewsbury versus Newcastle, Gloucestershire versus Hunslet, Sheffield Oldham and Swinton versus Rochdale. As the road to Wembley, as the cliche goes, continues. You'd like a crack at that, Andy, this year, wouldn't you? Another final with the Catterman Tigers. Obviously you've been there before, but I was there on the Friday and spoke to you at the captain's run. It was a great atmosphere, great build up. Just a shame it didn't quite happen on the day for the side.
Yeah, well, it was great. The fans had a fantastic day, regardless of result. But we'd like to get there again this year. And we'll just have to see, look at the draw, really, and see what happens.
Certainly myself and Mark are hoping that all Yorkshire teams do well in the Challenge Cup and the Grand Final, so we get another trip out to Wembley, because it was a great day for us at Radio Yorkshire last year. And I guess, Tim, as a referee, those must be the games you aim for as you work week in, week out to get selected for those big games.
Yeah, they're obviously the highlights of what we do. And just like the players go through a long season, it's a long season for us. Pre-season starts back in November or December. And it's what we aim for. And I've been lucky enough to have quite a few appearances as a touch judge, especially some of the big games over the past few years. And they're the highlights, definitely.
So I mentioned earlier, Tim, regarding if you want to be a quality player and get to the where you want to be at international, look at 8 out of 10, for 26 games of the 30. How does the referees and touch judges get selected for the finals themselves? Is it a point system what they have through every week, or how does it go? And how does for instance, because it seems to be that Benfen and Silverwood always get the big games. So how is it monitored? How is it selected?
There has been a move to a bit of a points-based scoring system this year, but that it never works by listing 1 to 6 of who's got the highest marks like a school. It ultimately and simply comes down to the opinions of the coaching staff,
right.
And it's as simple as that, really. A lot of refereeing works on experience and seniority, and it can be quite difficult to break through the ceilings you hit at each level. So
one question I'd like to ask as well, and because at times I have to turn my remote control down because it seems to be, is it a competition sometimes with referees who can shout the loudest on when they're on television? Hold, move. Is it a competition between you guys who can shout the loudest sometimes?
Sometimes it's a competition to see if I can shout the quietest. To be honest, I'm known
but
as
it,
one of
them. But to be honest with you, it gets very annoying. So many people have said to me,
probably,
Squire, is it a competition between the officials who can shout the loudest?
Well, on a serious level, it is. It's probably one of the hardest parts of the job. I've seen a voice coach at different times because it's something.
A voice coach?
Yeah, I had problems with losing my voice during a match, and I remember speaking to a professional.
Well, you shouldn't speak and shout to him, or shoot your whistle.
Exactly.
Isn't that what referee's supposed to do?
We could do with a foghorn or something. And she said, "What? So you're running around with your heart rate at 160 for 80 minutes and screaming at the top of your voice?" And you know, these professionals couldn't believe it. They said there isn't another profession.
But that's the question. Is it necessary to do all that? Is it necessary to do all that shouting?
Well, I don't have the strongest voice, so I've always had to find a way around it and play to my other strengths. So, refereeing for me isn't about who shouts the loudest. Absolutely not. And
I think they've got to be sometimes, because you might hear it like that on telly, but when he's telling us to move in game, do you know, we can't.
Yeah.
Sometimes we can't hear him. And we're getting penalised and we're going mad because they're not calling the ball.
Sometimes,
but, you know,
a loud crowd.
Well, I must say, the loudest of them all has been Ian Smith. There's no two ways about that.
True.
Ian Smith was quite literally pathetic. He was overpowering, wasn't he? So Ian Smith wins that competition of the loudest of the referee. I know Smith, I like Ian very well, yeah. I know, but he gets that honour without a doubt.
But it's a TV thing. Surely we don't need the volume up during the course of the game. It should only be there when you're talking to players. And actually, when you are talking to players and we want to hear what you're saying and what the players are saying back, you get commentators talking over the top of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a bit like ref cam as well. I mean, were you involved in the technological advances to put and some equipment on your head?
Well,
again, I mean, you started talking about referees being invisible. How can you be when you've got a camera?
But it's not just the camera, but it's that shell. You're like a Ninja Turtle, aren't you?
Yeah, it's very.
Can you know that about? It must be a bird, surely.
We train all week to get in the best shape, and then you go out with a backpack on your back.
Yeah, you're like a Ninja Turtle, aren't you? And that silly thing on your head.
I mean, I have the great honour of. I was actually the first to wear the ref cam at the Magic Weekend the other year, and. It can be a distraction, but yeah, you've just got to get on with it.
I think we should go, and I hate to use the word, old school, get rid of all that tosh, let referees give what they see, and then we'll all abide with what you see, because you're only human, you can only give what you see, blow your whistle, and that's it.
Well, the thing that gets forgotten is, you know, that the shouting is, it's a guide at the end of the day, and you get a lot with players of, well, I didn't hear you, but sometimes I think, you know,
well,
the
players will be pretending that.
We've got to remember. Of course, people don't.
What are you leading?
Of course, when the crowd's up, you don't hear us. Yeah. Absolutely, but the onus works both ways, and players generally know what they're doing as well. And as I said, me personally, I've always been big on like the small talk of one to one, face to face, rather than the bawling and the shouting, because it doesn't really work for me.
So which player do you like refereeing them? Come on, which captain do you find more? Come on, you've got Australia next week, you don't matter, you know. Which player do you find most annoying? Because I say Robbie Whitfield, he named himself Darryl Powell and Ellerick, so there must be one captain who really gets under your skin.
Oh, you get very different characters, and talking before with Phil, as I said, I came in very young for Super League, and probably a chance really to thank a lot of the players out there, because, you know, by and large, they've treated me with respect, and I've been able to work with different captains who've been very different, but by and large, as I said, have been really good to work with. And, you know, there's been...
We don't sit on the fence on this show, you know. Come on!
What was the question again? Good captains. Andy wasn't bad.